It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and is approximately a kilo and a half lighter since the lockdown haircut. So I'm Kevin Day in sunny South London and he's Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire down there in Sussex, which is just as sunny, I imagine, and heady with the smell of fresh goat's cheese and lavender honey. Kieran, how are you?
I'm very good, Kevin. I also had my post-lockdown haircut. And my first feeling was just how cold it is without having this sort of grizzly Adams on top of my head.
My ears were freezing. It's just a terrible middle-aged man thing to complain about, isn't it? I queued up. It started snowing outside the barbers and I came home. My ears were cold. It's terrible. Kieran, I'd like to thank you, actually, and I'd like to thank Brighton, actually, for showing Gary Neville and all those other Brighton-loving pundits at Sky that a 0-0 draw between two passing teams can be every bit as dull as any other 0-0 draw.
Boy, was that painful. That was dreadful football.
Wasn't it just? I joined in a pub quiz halfway through online. That's how bored I was. Later in the show, we will be hearing from Tom Markham, who recently became a director at Wigan Athletic following the Bahraini takeover. He's also head of strategic business development at SI, who made the game Football Manager, and producer of a brilliant new football film, Kaiser. And we spoke to him about all those things, but mainly about Wigan and the good news at last for Wigan fans. But Kieran, it's news day, so let's have some news first. At Swindon Town, and the club's owner and chairman, Lee Power, have been charged by the FA over breaches of regulations on working with intermediaries. I've seen a lot of concern on the socials from Swindon fans about this, none of whom seem entirely sure what that charge actually means, but are all very worried about potential outcomes.
Yes, this isn't great by the sounds of things. Under FA rules, a football club cannot be owned by either a player or an agent, because there are clear conflicts of interest. And in theory, Swindon Town Football Club, which are owned by a company called Seabeck 87 Limited, which in turn, when you delve into it even deeper, are owned by a company called Swinton Reds 20 Limited, are then owned by this bloke called Lee Power. And you know, under normal circumstances, if you've got one person owning a football club, then all is tickety-boo in the sense that it's quite easy to sell. Lee Power tried to sell the club, I think a year or two ago, and then all of a sudden, a guy called Michael Standing, who is an agent, says, "Oh, you can't do that. I own half of it." Yeah. And Lee Power says, well, no, you don't own half of it. And when it went to a court case, and during the court case, Lee Power says, no, Michael Standing doesn't own half of it. Gareth Barry does. And people are going, what? Gareth Barry, yeah. And Michael Standing is Gareth Barry's agent. So according to this bloke, Lee Power, Gareth Barry lent £800,000 because he can't buy shares in the club, because he's not allowed to own it. And he was entitled to 50% of the profits and also 50% of the proceeds when the club was sold. So it's all getting very confusing. But now the FA have said, what is all this that's going on? We think that you're trying to pull the wool over our eyes, and that it's either Gareth Barry or Michael Standing that have been involved with the club. They shouldn't have been involved with Swindon Town. Right. But nobody's quite certain who owns this 50%, because Michael Standing appeared to be... He's been charged as well by the FA, as has a company called First Touch Professional Management, which is his agency company. They've been charged through by the FA for owning a bit of Swindon when they're not supposed to own. And then yesterday, Michael Standing, who has been a director of First Touch Professional Management since the day the company was formed, he mysteriously was removed from the list of directors. So it's all horrendous. And the Swindon Town Supporters Trust have been trying to get to the bottom of this. And you know, it's an impossible task, trying to get to work out who owns the club, and if the club is sold, then who is going to be the beneficiaries. But their fear, and you can fully understand this, is that if the Football Association also end up charging the club, they could end up with a points deduction. I'm sure you recall in the year that Swindon Town did get to the Premier League, there were some shenanigans taking place that year, and they were given an absolutely horrendous penalty on the back of this. So that's where we stand at present. It's fair to say that there's little love lost between Lee Power and the fan base, because he's not been very keen to communicate to them. And also he's been claiming that the club has nearly gone into administration on more than one occasion, which means that the fans, of course, who love the club, just like all fans do, they're becoming very nervous on top of this as well.
We know from past experience, Kieran, that the FA don't always choose the fairest outcome. But if nobody can actually decide who owns the club, it would seem particularly unfair if it was the club that was punished, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. And I don't think this is a probable outcome, but equally, from the perspective of fans, given that the ownership of the club at best can be described as opaque, you can understand why they are nervous and why they are asking questions. To be fair to the local MPs, they've come out in support of the fans as well. So we do need somebody to establish the position here. I don't think it's going to be easy, and I don't think it's going to be solved particularly quickly either. Although Lee Power has been trying to flog the club, and I think this was part of the issue which led to the confusion between him and Gareth Barry and Michael Standing as to who were to be the beneficiaries from the sale.
Yeah, I think we also need to have a brief chat with somebody from the Swindon Town Supporters Trust, so maybe we can get Guy onto that. Just one more thing, Kieran. I understand that a player can't be involved in owning a club. Does that include a player who plays for them? I mean, if God forbid, Palace were to get into trouble and Wilfred Zaha, for example, could buy the club, that wouldn't be allowed?
No, that would not be allowed. That's definitive per Football Association rules.
Right, OK. Any Palace fans listening, by the way, that's a purely hypothetical situation. I'm not even asking for a friend. I'm just making sure that you can't buy a club even if you pay for that club and don't intend to play for anybody else. Now, Kieran... two stories coming up that we mentioned on Sunday, bizarrely. You were worried that the Derby takeover wasn't cut and dried, and new details are now emerging, aren't they?
Yes, this is to do with the prospective owner, Eric Alonso. Now, Eric Alonso is 29 years old. He has a sports agency, and he says, "Oh, I've got Luis Figo and Roberto Carlos," and you go, "Oh, right, that's pretty impressive." And then you start to then look a bit further. Okay, those are former players who aren't necessarily involved in football at present. I think Luis Figo is involved at UEFA. He does a really good job. He's a really smart guy. Roberto Carlos is associated with charities and football. Again, fantastic role, but they're not really at the heartbeat of the game. I went on to Transfer Market to see if I could find out who the agency had on their books. And the most high profile player is Bilbao's reserve goalkeeper. So this isn't quite perhaps as glamorous, excuse me, as Mr. Alonso was claiming to be. He was also saying that his family has made money through hotels and vineyards. Yeah, that's very good, but you know, the hotel industry isn't exactly booming at present. So that looked a bit strange. And then he's been very keen to engage with the media. He claimed that he was involved in some capacity at Sheffield Wednesday. He tried to buy the club. That didn't work out, and there was a big fallout between him and Delfon Chancery. He then claimed that he was also trying to buy Cardiff City Football Club, to which Cardiff's response was, well, just hold on there. We did have a sort of effectively a phone call with him, and that was just sort of a brief chat, but we asked him to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and he wouldn't. And also, they asked him to, before they started to go into any serious negotiations, to provide proof of funds. And again, he didn't. So it's a bit like my mate Scratch Card. He once had an Instagram photo liked by one of the women from Girls Aloud. And he then was claiming that she fancied him, and I think it's this type of not quite as close a relationship as one party is claiming to have. Now it could be that one of the girls from Girls Aloud has a secret hankering for a 47-year-old stationery seller, but I'm not convinced by that. So that doesn't exactly present Mr. Alonso in a particularly good light. He's also said that as far as Derby County is concerned, he's saying all the right things, but then there's right things and there's right things. He says, yes, clearly our aim is to get into the Premier League. Ideally, our aim is to get into the Champions League. And I think Derby fans might be going, hold on, that involves an awful lot of money. And he says, "Well, if it takes £150 million, I can do that." And I'm thinking, "Well, £150 million won't actually get you very far at all. In fact, it won't necessarily get you out of the Championship, especially as we're still uncertain as to Derby County's position with regards to financial fair play, because there are outstanding charges from the EFL." In respect of their amortization policy. So his claims do seem to be a little bit, perhaps over-ambitious. The company he has set up to acquire Derby County is called No Limit Sports Limited, and it presently consists of £2 in shares. Now, you and I could set up a company, put a pound in each, and you say, oh, we're going to use that to buy X, Y, or Z. So you do feel a little bit uncomfortable. I'm sure he's a very well-meaning guy, but does he have the resources? I think this was one of our concerns in respect of him on Sunday when we first discussed the issue. There's some intriguing photographs of him where he claimed to be some sort of boxer as well. I think he did at one point do some boxing. I think he got into the Spanish Olympic squad. So his backstory is intriguing, to put it mildly. But this story first broke around about a week ago. You would have hoped by then that, or by, you know, by now, we would be in a position whereby the EFL have approved the bid, or you know, there's been sign of progress. We've seen nothing new from Derby since the initial announcement, so you just feel a little bit uncomfortable because we've been here once or twice before in terms of takeovers which were going to take place and didn't necessarily manifest themselves.
I barely know where to start, Kieran, because there's a couple of things to unpack in that story. First of all, his company is genuinely called No Limit Limited, is it?
No Limit Sports Limited.
Okay, so No Limit Sports Limited. If he's done that to be hilarious, that's quite fun, but it looks a bit odd, doesn't it? No Limit Limited.
Yes.
I've worked with Girls Aloud. I can't imagine any of them turning up one afternoon in rehearsal saying, "Hello, girls, and Kevin, here's my new boyfriend, Scratch Card."
Yes.
Why is he called Scratch Card? Is this one of those really simple nicknames? He's called Scratch Card because he buys a lot of scratch cards, or is there?
Yeah. He turned up a pub. Oh, yeah. Oh, I want a tenner on a scratch card on Wednesday. I'm going, yeah, but you spend £100 a week on the damn things. Yeah, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, fair point. It's just I need to check these because, yeah, you know what football nicknames are like.
Yes.
Yeah. Like my mate's friend Donkey Head, who turns out he has got a head the size of a donkey. It's not as clever as I thought. More importantly, I paid attention in the question about Swindon Town, and I'm fairly certain that somewhere in there we established that an agent can't own a club, and yet Eric Alonso is an agent. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. So what is the position of his agency? So it adds to the degrees of confusion. Is he just there as a front man for a consortium? Will it actually be that the money is coming from other sources? And we did discuss this on Sunday, that there is potential Indonesian investment, but that's not guaranteed. It's all very confusing.
Now, this is an odd one, Kieran, because on Sunday, just a few days ago, we had a question from Dave Bloom in Australia asking if a potential new owner of the club he supports, Central Coast Mariners, was a wrong'un. And now, days later, it seems that Manchester United are in talks to buy them. I'm hoping that they were listening to the pod and suddenly thought, well, here's a team that seems to be up for grabs. But why are Central Coast Mariners suddenly so sought after, Kieran?
It's a strange one. I mean, they had a bad season last year, but I think they're presently top of the A-League. So that would be indicative of appear to be playing well at present. By all accounts, the owner of the club, a guy called Mike Charlesworth, feels he's taken the club as far as he can go. And because it's Australian soccer, as far as they're concerned, it's a franchise. So there's talk about selling it to another bidder. And why Manchester United have been linked is slightly uncertain. But of course, we do have the case of Manchester City owning a club in Melbourne, who were originally called Melbourne Heart and are now called Melbourne City. And they've changed their kit colour, so it's more sort of in the city style. Australia is a big market for football, and there's lots of potential players there. And you know, we've seen the likes of Harry Kewell and Mark Viduka make a really positive impression on the Premier League historically.
Yeah.
Manchester United did play a friendly against Leeds a couple of summers ago in Australia, and there were huge crowds. I think it was 55,000 yeah. turns up for what, as far as Australia is concerned, is a minority sport. So it could be that Manchester United are thinking of dipping their toe into the multi-club model, because there's been talk about Liverpool doing this. Clearly, Manchester City are ahead of the game with regards to the multi-club approach. And it could be that the Glazers now think, well, there's money to be made from spreading your costs and spreading some of your risks by having football investments across the globe.
But Australia is a big market, but mainly it's a big market for the Premier League, isn't it, rather than for its own football?
Yes. I mean, I think you and I, we can remember our mums and dads playing the pools back in the 70s when, and in the summer, it turned into Australian football. And you didn't have a clue about these clubs, but it was just something to do with the pools. And that's about as far as it ever went. Football doesn't get huge crowds over there. It is competing against Aussie rules, rugby league, rugby union, and so on in that time of year. So I think it would be very challenging, but from Manchester United's point of view, there are some positives in that you could buy the club relatively cheap. Clearly, there won't be any language issues. There are potential links via the Commonwealth in terms of visas. So it could be that they feel that this could be an experiment for them, which would be relatively low risk and low cost.
So I'm sure there'll be people listening to this asking that Brexit happening, this means it's more likely that UK clubs will be looking to so-called Commonwealth countries than European clubs as feeder clubs, for want of a better word.
It makes a lot of sense from that perspective. I mean, I'm not fully au fait with the visa issues, but you can see the benefits from the perspective of a Premier League club in having a feeder club in somewhere like Australia. If it's easier to then bring through players to the Premier League, I think Aaron Moy was a classic example for Manchester City in that they effectively recruited him on a free transfer. I can't even find a picture of Aaron Moy in a Manchester City kit. And then they sold him to Huddersfield a year later for $8 million. Wow. Because he initially went on loan, then they sold him. So there are, I think Manchester United and perhaps some other clubs have seen this as a vehicle through which they can make money for the mothership, which is really useful for things such as financial fair play.
Right. The PFA have written an open letter to all EFL clubs and players about squad sizes next season.
Yes, as you may recall, there was a dispute between the PFA and the EFL with regards to squad salary caps. And we were fortunate enough to have the great Nick DiMarco on the show explaining how he worked on behalf of the PFA and successfully overturned this. Well, the EFL clubs also introduced at the same time squad limits in terms of the number of players. And I think these are 25 in the Championship and 20 in League One and League Two. The PFA argue that, hold on, we've got a collective bargaining agreement and the nature of that means it's collective bargaining, and they feel that there has been no consultation between the PFA and the EFL, and that they're not happy about that. They did propose a 25-man squad limit on a temporary basis for all three divisions of the EFL for next season. And they are claiming that if they did this, then they could then get around the table, sort things out, and this would reduce legal costs. I mean, the EFL's legal costs must be sky high, given all of the issues they've had to deal with. There's so many clubs that have been they've had disputes with who appear to have had breaches of financial fair play, which is their duty bound to investigate. But the EFL, the PFA have also said, well, the EFL have rejected their proposal. So where we go from here is uncertain. And you've got to look at it from the perspective of all the different stakeholders. Yes, the owners are losing money in respect of clubs in the EFL, but we have young men whose careers are on the line as well. And sometimes our perception of footballers is very much coloured by we think that they've all got glamorous lifestyles, but that's not the case in the lower leagues.
No, of course not. This is a very interesting one, Kieran. Kevin De Bruyne used data analysis instead of an agent to broker his new £83 million Man City contract.
Yes. What Kevin De Bruyne did was that he had an agent who has ended up being arrested. In fact, he reported his agent to the authorities, and the agent has been arrested in relation to money laundering and fraud issues when Kevin De Bruyne was at Wolfsburg. Wow. And it appears that some transactions were processed through that paragon of virtue that is Liechtenstein, in terms of its relatively relaxed approach to taxes. So he was without an agent.
And to opening times in bars, as I can attest.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. It's a lovely city, Vaduz. Very interesting. Very cool. Very thin air.
Thin air?
Yes, high up, you see.
Oh, okay. Right, yeah. Does that mean you have to drink more? I don't understand things.
Yeah, biologically and scientifically, there's a link between thin air and drinking more, apparently.
Rightio.
Something would have to explain the way I felt on the flight afterwards.
And rather than acquire himself a new agent, Kevin De Bruyne decided to negotiate his own contract. So therefore what he did, he appointed a lawyer to check the small print. He asked his dad for a bit of advice as well. And he got in contact with a data analytics company, because he wanted to show just what a contribution he has made to Manchester City. Effectively, he was doing a glorified PowerPoint presentation of, wow, this is Kevin De Bruyne, isn't he great? Which is an unusual way, because effectively it's a bit like a job interview, where he's already there. I think it's gone very well. I mean, yeah, Manchester City clearly wanted to keep him. He seems happy enough in Manchester. So I know that you are thinking about Palace recruiting players this summer. I think he won't necessarily be on your radar anymore. But all the parties seemed quite happy. And again, this is paper talk. He is now going to be the Premier League's highest paid player on £385,000 a week, which over the course of the remainder of his contract will take us to that figure of 83 million.
Well, he's not our sort of player, Kieran, to be perfectly honest. All that running about, passing it to somebody with the same shirt on, scoring goals, he really wouldn't fit in. It's an odd one, isn't it? Because I understand they wouldn't take my word for it if I was to phone up Man City's bosses and say, Kevin De Bruyne is a really good player. But surely, of all the players in the world who doesn't have to prove he's a good player, Kevin De Bruyne's got to be up there, isn't he? He's a genius of a footballer.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I guess perhaps he just wanted to have the backup data, because in my view, Manchester City, and we'll be talking to Tom Markham later in the show, and they're of course big into analytics at Football Manager, but at Manchester City have got one of the best data analytics departments in all of football. So they must surely be aware of the significance of his contribution, but perhaps he felt he needed it for backup, and clearly it's worked in the sense that he's happy with the contract and so are the club.
Yeah, see, I'm just fantasising about Kevin De Bruyne turning up at Selhurst Park now with Roy saying to him, this is Luka Milivojevic, you'll be mainly passing to him 5 yards and backwards is pretty much it. But meanwhile, Raheem Sterling is setting up his own player agency, so he definitely won't be able to buy a football club, will he?
Well, no, but he's another player who's fallen out with his agent, and this does appear to be occurring on more than just an occasional basis. So I think he sacked his agent last year. He also is planning to negotiate his next contract. Presumably that will be with Manchester City. He's been fantastic since going there. So what's happened? We have a company called 1692 Sports Management Limited, and this is being formally run not by Raheem Sterling, as we've established, that can't be done, but by his mum.
Oh, okay.
So she appears to be the only shareholder. You know, how it will operate in terms of a day-to-day basis and the extent to which Raheem will be involved, I think I'm sure he'll take appropriate advice, but he can't be seen to be buying a club, but could he be involved in an agency? That's an intriguing one.
She could sign up Tom Ince's mum. That'd be quite useful.
Yes.
And finally, because we've got this really, really interesting interview to come with Tom Markham, but you've been doing a bit of number crunching about wage inflation in the Premier League here.
Yeah, well, because the Brighton versus Everton match was so exciting, I got my spreadsheet out.
Oh, my God.
That's right. Because some people have been saying to me, how much have player wages changed since the start of the Premier League? Has it made a huge difference? So since the commencement of the Premier League in 1992, wages in the Premier League have increased by 2,811%. And we say, well, that's a big number. But it's just a meaning. Numbers by themselves are meaningless. Can we put it into some form of context? So as I was awaiting the next throw-in in the Brighton versus Everton match, I went on to the Office for National Statistics website, and it said in 1992 when the Premier League started, the average price of a pint of lager was £1.46. Yeah. And if beer prices or if lager prices had increased at the same rate as Premier League wages today, a pint would cost you £47.17.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamacq, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Okay, well, let's just pause there, Kieran, while all our listeners north of Watford go, well, so much it costs in London now.
Hey!
That's very interesting. Yeah, normally it's a loaf of bread, Kieran, isn't it? The size of Wales that we're interested in. But
yeah, so I did it for a loaf of bread as well.
Of course you did, Kieran. What was I thinking of? How much would a loaf of bread be?
£16.80.
Which, to be fair, in one of your farmers' markets isn't far short, basically.
It's true.
I just love that. No wonder the Baroness is such a patient. The Baroness is sitting there thinking, well, this is a dull game. Maybe we'll get a bit of Scrabble together or some chat. But no, he's looking at the average price of a pint of beer in 1992. Yes, that's very interesting. That is interesting. Any other products?
Well, I guess the one thing which affects us perhaps as football fans, that was the first year of satellite television. So you could get a subscription for £2.99 a month. Now, today, again, if it had risen as fast as footballers' wages, it would cost you £84 a month. And I was thinking, by the time you pay for Sky, BT and Amazon, and admittedly, you're getting a few more matches,
yeah,
but remember, in those days, you used to get the Champions League for free because... Yeah, yes, it was on the BBC. It was, yes, on ITV, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes.
So today, I think we're probably paying pretty close to that. So, the cost of watching football from a fan's point of view has risen in line with, broadly in line with wages. But our everyday products have, fortunately, are a lot cheaper.
That's very interesting, Kieran. I'm sure we will get many requests from people with specific products, asking how much a jar of jam would cost these days. It's interview time, Kieran. Tom Markham is Head of Strategic Business Development at SI, who make Football Manager, and he's producer of a brilliant new football film called Kaiser. But even more importantly, he's now a director at Wigan Athletic following the Bahraini takeover of the club. And we talked to Tom about all of those things. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. Apart from that very impressive CV, you also hold an MBA in football industries from the University of Liverpool, don't you? So don't be too nervous around Kieran. He's calmed down a lot since those days.
Well, Kieran was actually after my time, unfortunately, but we've spoken on many occasions at the university.
Of course you have. And I'm genuinely impressed to see that you presented the Premier League's best dissertation. That's very impressive.
Yeah, well, I think that, I don't know if that's still the case, but yeah, the Premier League sponsored it at that time. And a lot of the work focused on the valuation of football clubs, which Kieran has been very close to as well.
Of course. The reason I'm so impressed about that is that from pod to pod, I can't keep in my head what amortization means. So to have somebody on who's done the best dissertation. Look, Tom, it's particularly good to speak to you because we've been involved in the Wigan story since the dark days. And way back last summer, I think we all fantasised about a day like this. Can Wigan fans truly breathe out now, do you think?
I'd like to hope so, yeah. I think having got to know the owners quite well over the last few months, Their heart is in the right place, and they really do want to restore the club to past glories and where they should be, really.
How did you get involved in the takeover, and will you have a specific role as director?
How I got involved in the takeover, actually another alumnus of the Football Industries MBA, Ollie Gottman, is the CFO of the family office for Mr. Al Jazmi, who is the new owner. So he got in touch in January and said that they were interested in looking at football clubs, but specifically Wigan. And that was in around the time that the Spanish bid fell away. Yeah. And they had previously looked at that, but they weren't fully set up to move as quickly as the administrators wanted. So I was brought in to help get the deal over the line, to help with the appointment of relevant people to do due diligence, etc. And ultimately, as the process went on, they asked me would I be interested in getting involved with the club longer term, and was subsequently offered a non-exec role.
Wow. And will you have a specific role as non-exec? Will you have a brief?
Yeah, so all of the directors' positions, you know, are assigned, and they've done everything properly. So there is a brief. My brief is more around strategy and being a sounding board, if you will, as to where the club is going to go, what we need. As Kieran has probably mentioned, I know quite a lot of people within the industry, so if you need certain areas of expertise, usually we'll be able to find someone who can cover those.
I like the way you say it. If you need anyone, that's the way Kieran says it. That must be the Liverpool University way, is it, if you need anyone. What exactly, Tom, did the new owners buy from the administrators? Have you bought the lot, the stadium, the training ground, everything?
Yeah, so the council have actually been brilliant in all of this. So there's a new long-term lease on the stadium, obviously the training ground as well. The main thing is the membership of the EFL and the fact that the club is very clean. And, you can look at this in two ways. Obviously, it's not great to lose so many good young players from the squad, but ultimately the administrators were doing their job at the time. And there aren't a lot of football clubs that are almost a blank canvas. I think there's only five players that are still under contract.
Wow.
After the end of this season. So we've come in, we're looking to support Liam, who's been doing a brilliant job, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's such a difficult scenario, and your back is against the wall as a manager, but I think he's done an amazing job to motivate the players.
Yeah, there aren't many clubs either where the administrator leaves suggesting that a statue should be put up at the ground of him as well, either. Is that going to happen?
I think Dave Whelan's statue is safe as the only one outside the stadium at the moment.
It's a good statue, Dave. I've said this on the pod before. I had one of my happiest days filming at Wigan with Dave Whelan, who was a remarkable man, and it's why it's a club that I've got a massive soft spot for. Will there be further payments to make, Tom, if, for example, we're going to promote it back to the Championship?
No, there's no further payments for any performance related outcomes. So it's almost a case now. I think the EFL have become a lot more stringent in terms of their ownership requirements. So the ownership and directors test, obviously everyone passed, but that took maybe a little bit longer than we would have liked. But you can understand why with everything that happened to the likes of Barry. So, but no, there's no other payments that need to be made.
That's good news, Kieran, isn't it? Because that's something you were worried about, wasn't it?
Well, I think it's great news for Wigan because the new owners know exactly what they've paid for, and it, as Tom was implying, that come the summer, which is going to be a buyer's market as far as recruitment is concerned, they're going to be in a incredibly strong position because they've got no debt.
Which is brilliant. Tom, Wigan fans are obviously delighted, but how do you manage expectations now? Because if they're anything like me, they'll hear the word Bahrain and they'll be thinking billions, won't they?
Well, I think, you know, a few people from the new ownership group have spoken publicly, and these guys want to do everything the right way. They want to build the club up. It's going to be focused around the academy. There will be recruitment, but not crazy recruitment. We've seen some very wealthy owners go into League One in particular recently, one of whom was at the DW yesterday. Yeah. But I'd say stability, yes. Extravagant spending, no.
Do you know what we've learned on this pod, Tom, and also we've learned from too many decades of being football fans between us, that it often takes adversity to bring out the best in fans, and Wigan fans were amazing throughout this whole thing. So how do you anticipate engaging with those fans in the future?
I think I've been following on social media a lot of the, let's just say, aftermath of the takeover. And as you said, some of the characters, it's just amazing. Some of the just really, really funny chants and, you know, Bahraini flags everywhere and people changing their names. So you can see that. And, well, funnily enough, Mal Branigan, who's gone in as chief executive, Irish heritage, Ollie, Irish heritage, myself, Irish heritage. So I think we can relate to the people of the Northwest very, very well. I think we've got an extremely similar mentality. So I'm sure there'll be some good knees up in the future with a lot of the fans. But we're keen to engage with the supporters groups. Community and academy are really, really important going forwards for the you know, building this club back up.
Is that a Dublin accent then I detect there?
Yeah, I grew up in Dublin, Kevin, yeah.
Yeah, well, my mum's from Donegal, and I'll be honest with you, Tom, she didn't 100% approve of Dublin, to be perfectly honest. in fact, like a lot of people from Donegal, she didn't really approve of anything outside Donegal, to be perfectly honest. I was 21 before I knew there were other counties, but it was that was a brilliant result against Sunderland, and obviously this is a stupid question because retaining League One status is presumably vital, but do you sense a mood of optimism around the club already, just around the infrastructure, around the staff that are left and around the players and the management?
Yeah, I think particularly with the staff, you can see, you know, how relieved they are that their futures are. Mal has been handling more the manager and the players and everything else. But I definitely have seen that firsthand. And, you know, I think it is massive because a football club can be the heartbeat of the place that it's based. And I think Wigan is no different from that perspective.
Well, it's strange. You mentioned the Northwest, and I think a lot of people who don't know the Northwest well, and I'm one of them, kind of forget that everything isn't a suburb of Manchester, if you know what I mean. And you forget sometimes that Wigan and Bolton and places like that are distinct, independent towns with their own identity. And that's very much what you've got with Wigan. And also you've bought a football club with a recent, very proud history as well.
Yeah, well, considering, you know, the club won the FA Cup so recently, it's phenomenal to have that sort of history in from a modern perspective. But I think, as I mentioned, the academy is really, really important. I think Gregor has done an amazing job of developing, that's Gregor Rioch has done an amazing job of developing a lot of players. So that's something that we want to continue with. We also want to build up relations with some of the clubs in the area and some of the more progressive clubs for you know, loan players, etc. So that's something that we've been concentrating on already.
I hate this question and I hate myself for asking it, but it's something listeners seem to like to know. Have you set yourself targets? Have you said privately that we want to be the Championship in 2 seasons, the Premier League in 5 seasons, or are you just still taking a deep breath after having saved the club?
I'm not going to go down the Derby route for this right now, but
none of us wants that, Tom. Trust me.
No, I think coming in at this stage in an extremely tight, bottom of League One, our focus is primarily on trying to keep the club in the division, but we're realistic. But I think depending on what happens there, you always have to have contingency plans in place. But I'll make no secret that the group feels that Wigan is a club that should be in the Championship or above. Mm. And that the ownership are realistic about this, that this could take, 5-6 seasons. But I think that's the sort of level. And they're not going to cap any ambition, but they just want to be realistic about it. But it's a very, very difficult one to call at the moment, given where the club is in League One.
Away from Wigan, Tom, you work with Sports Interactive on the legendary Football Manager game. How were sales during the pandemic? Did a lot of people turn to the game for their football fix?
Yes, and it's actually humbling from an SI perspective. The numbers were crazy, actually. And it was funny because at different times, right at the very start, when you saw different lockdowns going on, I can remember in Italy before everything kicked in over here in the UK, but we could actually see spikes in these different places in terms of the player base. So there was a direct correlation to where you were geographically. And it's something during lockdown we've tried to focus. We've worked with a lot, I think over 50 mental health charities globally.
Oh, wow,
to really? To just, get the message out that it's been such a difficult time. But and obviously at the start of everything, Kevin, there was no football. So we were, along with some of the other football video games, probably the only outlet from that perspective. Mm.
I suspect you may have been asked this before, and I suspect you've refused to answer it, but have actual football clubs approached you about using your database? Because you've probably got the best scouting system in the world, haven't you?
Yeah, well, we actually have multiple deals with clubs. I think we're up to 1,500 scouts globally who compile the data, and there's a... there's lots of checks and balances, as you can imagine, within that. But those scouts, a lot of them work in professional football, work for clubs. Some of them work in the gambling industry because there's a lot of correlation there. But yeah, like to put that in perspective, I think the last time I spoke to someone at City Football Group, they had 40 scouts globally. So the numbers are unbelievable. So a lot of clubs will come to us and use the database as maybe a starting point, and they'll feed all of their other data in there because they know how comprehensive it is.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether it's worth asking for your number to pass to Roy Hodgson, but I suspect Roy is probably a little bit too old school to use anything scientific and up to date to attract solid, hardworking midfielder players to Palace.
Well, I think Palace are getting much better on the data front, Kevin, so you never know.
Oh, yeah, I'm writing that one down. Thank you very much. Now, finally, Tom, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm really, really can't tell you how pleased we are on behalf of Wigan fans, because we entertained some very depressed people earlier on last year. But we don't normally allow product placement on the pod, Tom, although Who Are You by Kevin Day and The Price of Football Second Edition by Kieran Maguire are cracking books. But you've produced a film about one of the most fascinating people in football, and I've known about this person for a while, and I still don't know whether or not he actually exists or whether he's... So tell us a little bit about this new film, Kaiser.
Yeah, so the film is called Kaiser, the Greatest Footballer Never to Play Football, and it's a true story about a Brazilian con man who managed to blag a 26-year professional football career, 70s, 80s, 90s. And, you know, everyone thinks of Ali Dia under these circumstances, but this is Ali Dia on steroids, because actually this guy couldn't play, whereas Ali Dia just wasn't a Premier League level footballer, but played for, you know, the likes of Darlington and a few non-league teams. Whereas this guy genuinely couldn't kick a football, but managed to rub shoulders with some of the best players that ever lived and befriended them during this process. So for me, he's the greatest con man that ever lived, because ultimately to be able to have such a long career in the most difficult place to make it in the world as a professional footballer, in the golden era when all these players played domestically, you compare that to, say, Catch Me If You Can, where you've got someone who's putting on a pilot's outfit or faking a few checks. You know, any of us could do that.
And did nobody ever call him out on this? Did nobody ever just sort of accidentally throw him a ball to see if he could do keepy uppies? He just...
Part of it, Kevin, from my perspective, is that the players loved having him around. He was such a character, and he was almost the epicenter of everything that was entertaining from their perspective. That's why they would protect him towards the end of this, when they knew he couldn't play.
It's been... I can't wait to see that film, because I think that's just the most amazing story. And I can't wait to see what happens to Wigan, because I'm really pleased that that story has had a happy ending and has now got a happy beginning. So thanks very much for talking to us, Tom. We wish you all the best with all your commitments in future.
Thanks, guys.
That was I love the Dublin way he pronounces Kieran. That's very impressive. Two things, Kieran. A bit of housework first of all. That film is available on Amazon Prime Video, or I believe it's just called Prime Video now. But it sounds brilliant. We'll watch it tonight. I hope. Also, for Wigan fans, it feels like it's done now, doesn't it? It feels like this is a proper signed deal, and it sounds like there are people in charge of the club who know what they're doing and where they're going.
Yeah, they've recruited professionals. They clearly have a plan. They've inherited a clean sheet, in the sense that there is no debts, there's no loans or weird amounts owed in the Far East to unusual people to have to deal with. So the sole focus can be in respect of football.
And one thing as well, Tom was quick to point out that he was a non-executive director. For those of us who are not business-minded, what does that mean exactly at a football club?
Well, a non-executive director is somebody that will not be working at the club 5 days a week, but they will be attending board meetings. And as sort of Tom, you know, indicated, he's very much a sounding board. A good non-executive director will be your critical friend. There'll be somebody you can go to say, right, I'm thinking of doing this. And, you know, Tom's got an amazing amount of experience in football from a variety of fields. And I think he'll be very, very good and able to use his contacts and experience to say, yeah, I agree with that. Or have you considered getting in contact with person X or person Y? So I think it's very useful to have somebody with his degree of, first of all, enthusiasm. You know, I've known Tom for a few years, and he's absolutely, you know, he's 24/7 committed to whatever project he's working on. And he's very smart as well. The football industry, and he was too modest to say this, but when you are valuing a football club, the football industry method that is used is called the Markham multivariate method.
Oh, wow.
Because that was based on his PhD thesis. And that is, and I used that 2.5 years ago to value Arsenal. And when Arsenal was then taken over by, or rather the extension of the ownership was achieved by Stan Kroenke, I stuck in the figures using Tom's model, and it was 99.97% accurate.
See, I was so excited at finding out he had the best Premier League dissertation that I didn't go on to the next paragraph, which would have had that in it. That would have been very impressive. Now, before we go, Kieran, thank you to everybody who's become a patron of the pod via our Patreon site, including Ian Beresford, Sam Hawkes, Robert Stewart, Nicky Piggott, Julian Chenery, my very favourite theatrical producer, Rob Seamark, and Roy Nasse, who says, "It's an absolute pleasure to become a patron of the consistently best pod around. In fact, I find the show so inspirational, I've decided to retrain as a comedy accountant. Yes, I want to become Rishi Sunak." I'm welling up here, Kieran, because I've known Roy since 1972, and I think that's the first funny thing he's ever said. I really, you know, love you, Sean. Sorry you won't be here for my birthday, but Gaz will drink yours, don't worry. We also got a message from Ted Rogers, who we mentioned on a recent pod, who says, "Don't worry, Kevin, it's not the Ted Rogers. I actually forgot I'd used that name here." But it's based on the Mark E. Smith lyric, "Ted Rogers' brains burn in hell." There's a lot of things for younger people to look up in that last paragraph.
Yes. Basically.
But I just love the fact that Ted Rogers is using different names on different pods, basically. your sins will find you out. If you've got a burner phone for each pod as well, you will definitely be caught out, don't you worry. And now remember, our pod will always be free to air, but if you'd like to make a monthly contribution, go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question for us for our questions pod on Monday, email us on questions@priceoffootball.com. And as ever, I shall pass you over to Kieran for his trademark farewell.
Thank you again, folks, for all the feedback. If you could press the follow button on that big purple icon from Apple, it helps us. And if you could give us a review, if you can give us a 5-star review, it'd be absolutely fantastic. It is appreciated. It doesn't matter what you can say. You can take the mickey out of us as much as you want. But according to producer guy, it does help us in the charts, and it helps our credibility when we get in contact with people such as Tom, and he goes, "Who the bejesus are these idiots?"
We should point out, Kieran, that both you and I have Irish parentage, so it's all right for you to say that.
Absolutely.
That's for those woke English people going, "He can't say that, surely, can he?" Yes, he can. Bye, everybody. See you soon.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.